Worth Repeating is made possible thanks to the support from the 80/20 Foundation, the Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Cloud Nine. From your happiest moments to peak experiences, these stories are all about your highest highs. Can you think of a time when you were too high? The first storyteller is Candelaria Nieves Perez. Candelaria shares a story about her passion, her nerves, and how edibles need more time. A gentle reminder to have patience when consuming edibles.
In my local arts community, I am known as Candy, the love poet. Tonight, I will be Candy, the rock star. Travel with me, 2020, COVID hits, and the world shuts down. But my world begins to slowly open up. I am the mother of four. One of them has special needs. So I decide to pull them out of school and homeschool them. You would think that my child with special needs would be the biggest challenge. It wasn't. It was my five-year-old, a kinder kid. I was in charge of teaching this child to read, write, and discover the world. Now, I knew his learning style was very different because when I would play science videos for him, he would put the playback speed at the highest level until the narrator sounded like a chipmunk. And when I grilled him for the facts, sure enough, he got them all right. For math, he would practice his addition while he was dancing and grooving to his favorite songs. And for the dreaded alphabet, when he did respond to me, he was usually on a headstand or somersaulting his way through the living room. Despite my fears and anxiety, I am happy to report that now my fourth grader excels in reading and writing and is a genius in math. All this loving and learning gave me the confidence and the courage to go back to school. Within 2 years, I enrolled at Texas A&M. I won all the achievement awards. I published my poetry. And I earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in English Literature with a minor in Education. I pursued my passion, which is poetry. And I established my own open mic. Yeah, I'm a real rock star. And all rock stars need a home. I found mine in Tandem. It's a coffee shop deep in the heart of the South Side. Now you imagine entering Tandem through a ramp and what looks like a combination of a bodega, a living room, and a gallery. It's filled with eclectic art, photographs and paintings on the walls. For a writer like me, who needs inspiration when the muse seems to abandon her. The living room, well, it looks like a living room, right? It's full of chairs that don't match. Like a Mexican family reunion. You know, the one where we're like pulling all the chairs so everyone can sit together so that we don't miss out on the chisme. Gossip. Right in the center of Tandem is a wooden stage with a speaker and a microphone standing idly by, always calling my name. The highlight of hosting your own open mic is that I have front row seats to the top tier talent of San Antonio. The downside is my anxiety, all of them. Am I enough anxiety? Will I get the message through anxiety? Will I fall off the stage anxiety? Does my poem speak the message that I want to say, anxiety? And also, as a host and an empath, I carry everyone's anxiety. I am supposed to host people or poets and artists so that they can feel comfortable enough and safe enough to share their art. Because of that, I carry a whole mess of anxiety. But like a rock star, I carry it well. And every rock star has groupies. One in particular, about 10 years younger than me, offered a date. I declined. Offered a drink. I declined. But he would not give up. He bought me snacks and CBD gummies, laid them out on my table as an offering. Because I'm a rock star and I need to get the edge off. I tried a gummy. Didn't happen. Nothing worked. Tried a second gummy. Nothing. I did maybe 4, 6, 8. Well, who's counting, right? Now, I don't know if CBD gummies have instructions, because I wouldn't have read them anyways, because I was too busy reading the names of the poets. Alley Cat, Songbird, Raíz Infinita, Johnny, War, and Candy was confused. Because I felt no high. At the end of the open mic, the only high I felt was the high of a job well done. Soon after, I found myself in my bestie Griselle's car, Toyota, driving through space. I saw visions of stars hitting concrete. And then it confirmed for me what I always knew, that we are all one energy. We come from the same source of love and poetry. That there is no hell, that we're more alike than different, and that I, in fact, am a rock star. Or maybe I was just high. Thank you so much.
This podcast is proudly supported by the 80/20 Foundation, dedicated to creating opportunities through education, community outreach, and meaningful impact. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Raven Medina. Raven shares a story about finding her happiest moments in a windowless room with a furry soulmate.
I spent my happiest days in a bathroom, specifically the 50 square foot windowless hallway bathroom of my house when I was 11 years old. Because of a dog, my first dog, Maya Marie, named after Maya Angelou and my grandma, Marie, much to her displeasure. Which is funny because it started for her. I'm not a native Texan. I was born and raised in Hawaii until I was about 10. And then when I was 10, my mama and I moved from Hawaii to Texas to be closer to my grandma, Marie. She'd been diagnosed with a heart condition, and she hadn't been given very much time left. Side note, which is also funny, because she lived 23 more years after our move. And being 10 years old, I wasn't really aware of what that move would mean. But like any good parent, my mom bribed me with a dog. You see, my aunt in Hawaii had a dog, a black lab, who up until then I'd grown up with. Her name was Eloise Byrd. Eloise after my favorite book character, and Byrd after myself, Raven. We did everything together. We shared food. We played on the beach. We drank out of the same water bowl. And I was genuinely distraught at the thought of leaving her. I also had a large community of family and friends I'd be leaving behind in Hawaii. So once we got to Texas, it was a huge change. Too hot to play outside, no water to swim in, and I didn't really have any friends in the neighborhood. So I turned inward. I clung to my books and begged the dog gods for a dog. My mom's only stipulation about our dog that we adopt was that it have light-colored fur, because a dark-colored fur dog would be too hot in Texas, and that wouldn't be fair. That's funny. Obviously, this was meant to just buy her time. And it sort of did, but I think she thought it would buy her more time, because about 1 year later, we were pulling up to the public library, and there she was, a puppy with brown and red spots and white fur. This is the part that gets iffy, because my mom says she was crying in the bushes, but I thought she was tied to one of the brick columns by a rope. I don't remember. I was already transfixed with her and obsessed. My mom went into the library. She asked around, and either nobody came forward or we stole a dog. I don't know. I don't care. I was 11, ecstatic, and beside myself because my prayers had been answered. We wrapped Maya in a towel, took her home, and bathed her. She was covered in fleas and ticks. I mean, you could see the fleas jumping off of her. So my mom quarantined Maya to the 50-square-foot windowless hallway bathroom until we could get in to see a vet. Naturally, this meant I, too, was quarantined to the bathroom until we could get in to see the vet. I piled my pillows, blankets, and books into the bathtub. Mind you, this was the early 2000s, so no tablets or smartphones. And that's where Maya and I bonded for what I thought was 2 weeks. My mom says was only 4 days. Maya became the center of my universe. She was my first true friend in Texas. I lost track of time in that bathroom. The only light I knew was the fluorescent overhead bulb. And my mom was either sweet enough to deliver my meals to me, or she didn't want to risk the chance of the fleas jumping to the rest of the house. Maya was my sassy, sometimes judgmental angel and our family hero. One time I was home alone at night and someone was jiggling the front doorknob. Maya went wild. She barked like a mad woman and threw all 45 pounds of her body against the front door, and they went away. Another time, my mom was mowing the backyard, and Maya barked to alert her of a rattlesnake. She was perfect. Almost perfect. When she got the zoomies, she would knock over the couch. One time, she snapped at my cousin. But I firmly believe it was my cousin's fault. I know she's listening. So sorry, Hillary. I love you. Maya also hated men. If you can count that as a fault. all men except for my Uncle Larry, Hillary's dad. In her later years, Maya became the sort of unofficial matriarch of our house. If she wanted a chair, you moved. She was a calm, reassuring presence who made our house in Texas feel like a home. In 2016, she passed away at home, surrounded by her favorite people, me, my mom, and my Uncle Larry. But she had a legacy, because in 2020, I was, you know, browsing the rescue sites, as one did during the pandemic, and I saw a dog named Maya. And I know it might be a common name, but to me, it was a sign. So now I have Maya Mariposa, and it's all thanks to Maya the First. Thank you.
This episode is proudly supported by the Lifshutz Foundation, a San Antonio-based charitable foundation committed to strengthening communities through philanthropy and support for meaningful causes. For this and more information, visit directory.tpr.org.
Our next storyteller is Rolly Agado. Rolly shares a story about a night he kind of forgot about. Rolly teaches us if you're gonna black out, go big.
So I woke up and I was in a place I didn't really recognize, and I'm nauseous and I'm dehydrated and I'm confused, and I look around and I'm starting to piece together the evening. I'm mentally trying to kind of calculate where I am. And I'm like, well, the last thing I remember was going to the Bahia Mar. I remember smoking a lot of drugs, just a lot of pot, drinking a lot, and I kind of bought some spotty LSD at the bar. So as I'm piecing all those things together, I realize, man, this is like the most fucked up I've ever been. This is the highest I've ever gotten in my life. And then I realized another first. I pissed myself. And I didn't just piss myself, like I'm kind of damp, so I pissed myself a while ago. And I look at my watch, and it's roughly 2 p.m. So I got to sort myself out, and I got to crawl over to the bathroom, and I got to just throw up. And as I'm kind of crawling to the bathroom, I look up, and to the left of me in the hallway, there's a bar stool, and it's embedded in the wall. I'm like, well, that's weird. And then down the hallway and kind of on the floor and on the walls, there's specks of something. I'm thinking it's blood. Like someone's been unalived. So I go to the bathroom, sort myself out, and I start to work up the courage to kind of walk around. And I start saying some names like, you know, Donnie, JJ. There's no answer. Now, these two guys are coworkers of mine. They're brand new friends. It's the summer of 97. I'm 19. We all actually work at the Bahia Mar. So I start to make my way down the hallway, and to the left, there's a door that's open, and in it is a bed, and it's perfectly fine. No one slept in it. Curiously enough, it's missing a dresser mirror. Like, that's weird. Make my way into the living room, and to the left where the television is a stop sign in it. And I'm like, I stole that stop sign last night. Starting to come back together. On the kitchen table is the dresser mirror. Some bacon on it, you know? I didn't do that. But then I look over and I see some coffee cups. And I'm like, oh, we did shots last night out of that. We're listening to Fatboy Slim. Fuck soul, brother. As soon as all that happens, in walks JJ. He's big old muscles. And he's carrying a cooler and some stuff, like, to fix the drywall. JJ, what the fuck happened? Bro, that was fucking epic. I can't wait to do it again tonight. JJ was in the military. So he didn't do drugs. He just really kind of drank a lot and broke hearts and pounded a lot of beer. So I'm like, dude, where's Donnie? What's going on? He goes, oh, bro, he ran into some money. He's doing blow in Brownsville, but you'll catch up with him later. I feel better because I don't think anyone got murdered. Like, he's here. We're going to maybe sort out the wall and get our deposit back. So I go home. I shower. I figure it out. I wake up the next day, I got to find Donald. And in the late 90s, there was no cell phones. You actually had to go and find people and stuff. Finding Donnie wasn't that hard. He used to take his phone calls and get mail at a bar. He was a mentor to me. I learned... I learned that you could actually like live off of happy hour menus and meals at strip clubs. So I go to the bar and I'm like, hey, dude, you guys seen Donnie? You just missed him, bro. He just went back to his apartment. Cool. Run up to the apartment. And sure enough, he's there. He's on the second floor looking over the Laguna. He's doing some rails of coke and he's like, dude, come on up. You know, hello. You know, he's got a little talking head CD and we're just kind of catching up. And I'm like, dude, what happened last night? And he goes, he's very upset at me. And he goes, I'll tell you what fucking happened last night, dude. I fucking saved your life. I'm like, all right. So we start to piece together the evening. We drank and we stole a stop sign, smoked some blunts. Why did you buy LSD at the bar? Well, I mean, he had it in a little vial and I'd never done it in sugar cubes. And I was 19 at the time and I was just out of college, out of my freshman year. And I was reading Carlos Castaneda, right? And I wanted to be Lester Bangs and I Hunter S. Thompson and these were my heroes. And this summer I was living out all these dreams and Donald was a DJ on the island, so I was able to get into a lot of places that he couldn't. So as we're kind of piecing the evening together, we all took the LSD. And the reason I did it was is because JJ was in the military. He couldn't do drugs and he used to always feel left out. But I remembered that you couldn't really screen for LSD. You had to get a spinal tap. So I thought this was a bonding experience for the three of us. So I took my bean and he took it and I said, Donald, here you go. And he was upset. And about 40 minutes into the night, we invited everyone back to the hotel. And we're doing shots and we're having a good time. And then the next thing I know, everything pixelates for me. And I kind of blank out and I start laughing like maniacally and I fall out of a chair. This freaks out a group of strangers that are there partying with us after party. So Donald and JJ, they kind of help me. Well, the LSD then kicked in for JJ. So he then started seeing everyone's faces turn into barcodes. And then he freaked out, but he cut his hand on my watch. So he starts bleeding everywhere. That's where the blood came. He then reaches for a bar stool because he thinks like I'm a replicant and he's going to kill me. But Donald stops him and he upset, throws it into the wall and he runs off to a room. This freaks everyone out. Everyone leaves. Then like another group of people show up, not sure what's going on. And they got a bag of blow and Donald's like, cool, let's party. But he's so high, he can't snort. So he freaks out. He kicks everyone out too. And it turned out to be the night that it was the highest night he had ever gotten also.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Pasha Mediterranean Grill, serving up fresh, authentic Mediterranean favorites made with quality ingredients, from flavorful gyros and kebabs to crisp salads and homemade hummus. For this and more information, visit gopasha.com.
Our next storyteller is John Carlson. John shares a story about reaching a new peak with his biggest critic, his mom.
So, I've had a standing weekly phone call with my parents going back for 33 years now. I'm originally from Connecticut. If you're not familiar with Connecticut, we're known, ironically, for two different things now. It's where they make Hallmark movies and emotional unavailability. I went to college out in Nebraska, so I was 1,500 miles away from my parents, and that's how the phone calls started. And they were simple check-ins, mostly with my dad at the time. And so they went a little something like, how you doing, son? Good. How are you, dad? Good. Need any money? I was in college, so yes, please. And so as I've gotten older, the phone calls have simply continued. But more importantly, as my parents have gotten older, they're in their 80s now, they've changed and evolved from them kind of checking in on me to me kind of checking in on them. Now, my parents, The best way I can describe them is kind of as a set of salt and pepper shakers, where they just go together. They're a set. They match. They work. But when you really look at the two, they're different. My dad is kind of the emotional, feely one. My mom is the one who quietly gets things done. So I realized when I went through these conversations how frequently I was working really hard to try to impress my parents over the process of these calls. My parents have always been proud of me. I know that. But there's a difference between proud and impressed. So I found myself sharing with this thing that I had done, or this person that I had met, or this place that I had gone, and I realized at some point that I was just kind of showing off. And to paraphrase Steve Martin from the movie L.A. Story, showing off is an idiot's way of being impressive. And let's face it, they're New Englanders. They're really hard to impress, especially my mom. So my mom, she's 5 foot tall. She's 110 pounds. And I think she missed her calling as a mob enforcer. You know those old kung fu movies back in the day where there would be all the ninjas kind of working their way in and there'd just be this little fella off in the corner. And all of a sudden the camera would just kind of pan over and you would just hear sounds of violence and carnage and the camera would swing back and there was just ninjas lying all over the ground. And the little fella was just kind of standing there in the middle of the scene. That's what I imagine happens at a Marshall's customer service counter when my mom realized she was overcharged for throw pillows. We went to lunch a few years ago, and the lunch wasn't great. It was oversalted. The sandwiches were cold. It just wasn't a good experience. But we powered through. We had someplace to be. And my mom said, "Why don't you guys go on ahead? I'll be out in a minute." So we did, and as we're standing on the sidewalk, a couple minutes later, my mom comes out to inform us that our lunch was free. Now, I don't know what happened in that restaurant. I can imagine, but the camera panned over to the side. So I had visited my parents over the summer, and just before I left, I wanted to do a load of laundry, and I opened the dryer, and there were sheets in the dryer, so I'm a good guest. I folded the sheets dutifully, and I set them aside, and I did my laundry, and we went on our way. And a couple weeks after that, I was on a phone call with my mom. And she said, "Oh, thank you so much for folding the sheets. You did a great job. I really appreciate it." And I said, "Yeah, sure, Mom, that's no problem." And a couple weeks later, phone call again. Mom said, "You know, I took those sheets out of the cabinet, and I went to put them on the bed, and I couldn't tell the difference between the folded fitted sheet and the folded flat sheet." That's pretty impressive. And I went, "Oh, well, thanks, Mom. That's great." Then a couple weeks later, another call. Mom brought up the fitted sheet again. And that's when I had a moment. I had been spending all of these years, all of this time, trying to be impressive and feeling like I was falling flat. What I suddenly realized, and it was so simple to me in that moment, is that while I was working to figure out what was being impressive, I wasn't paying attention to what my mom found impressive. And suddenly I'm reviewing 30 years of conversations, and I realize that my mom has always been impressed with me. And it was all over a fitted sheet. So I know what you want to know. Take the short side of the fitted sheet. Put your hands inside the inside-out corners. Right hand to left hand, you bring it down to the corner, you fold it over. You grab that other corner, you fold it over. You take your square, you fold it in half, and in half, and then a third, and a third.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Stay tuned for part two of the live event on the theme Cloud 9, now streaming. Worth Repeating returns this fall. Do you have a theme suggestion? You want to join the storyboard and help shape the stories that you hear? Maybe you just want to give us our flowers. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tori Poole.